Hello, and welcome to the Above Average Irrelevance podcast. Today is Monday, July 24th. I'm Matt Weaver, and I'm here with Scott Nelson, who's clanging around coffee on the table. Good evening, Scott.
Good evening, Matt.
How are you?
I'm doing well. How about you?
I'm great. Hard to believe, but it's true. We're recording again on my old laptop, which is back.
It's alive!
Yeah.
So what was wrong? Last time we left you, it was just a gray screen.
Yes, which made me fear for the logic board. But that was not the case. I reset the NVRAM. If you're an old Macintosh user, you would call it resetting the PRAM. Which has the side effect of resetting the volume that you've set the machine to, which let me hear the I've turned you on Macintosh bong, which gave me hope. There's an SSD in this machine, and it had died. And it had died in that horrible way that SSDs die, where they just stop. And then they leave you hanging. So if it had been completely broken, I would have expected to see the question mark, I can't find my disk, Mac sad face, but I wasn't getting that. But the disk was indeed destroyed. And here it is July, the 3-year warranty on that SSD ran out in May. So I had to buy a new one, but, you know, $100 later, I have a new SSD. I reloaded the machine from my Time Machine backup, and here we are. It was fairly painless. Fairly. I should point out for all of our listeners that if you do this, restore a computer from a Time Machine backup, like a, you know, on a new drive, like I have done. If your old drive had FileVault 2 whole disk encryption turned on, after you go through this process on the new drive, double check, because you probably will not have whole disk encryption turned on again. I didn't. So I had to turn that on again and wait for it to re-encrypt the disk, but that's easy to do. And here we are again, and it works.
All right.
So I'm happy. While we're talking about tech news, should we start with Yahoo?
Oh, yeah. Today, right, they announced a big deal. Verizon buys Yahoo.
Yeah. I think I saw a story that was a rumor on Sunday night, but yeah. Like $4 billion or $4.8 billion or something. So I have some thoughts. What are your thoughts?
Well, I can't believe that Yahoo is worth $4 billion when, I mean, this thing we might talk about later about Star Wars reminded me that Disney bought the Star Wars franchise for $4 billion, and it seems way more valuable than anything that is Yahoo. So I don't know. I haven't seen a breakdown. I guess they have a lot of eyeballs. They have a lot of traffic. You know, Yahoo Science or Yahoo Finance is big. Yahoo Mail is big. Messenger. They have an ad network. They have that search deal with Mozilla. But I actually heard that Mozilla has like a right of refusal with whoever the buyer is, that they don't have to continue the Yahoo partnership if Yahoo gets bought. Had you read that? I mean,
no.
So that isn't even a sure thing revenue-wise to the acquirer. I just don't understand how Yahoo's worth $4 billion.
Well, when I first saw this story, I was with some friends who are not in the tech industry. And they were like, wow, you know, I didn't realize Yahoo was for sale. And man, $4 billion is a lot of money. And my first thought was like you. Yahoo's still worth $4 billion, $4 plus billion. Wow, I'm kind of amazed. But then, you know, I turned to my friend and I said, they used to be worth a lot more. And he's like, really? And so we did a digging, and they used to be valued at one point at like $125 billion, right?
Well, right now their market cap's like $30 billion, isn't it? But that includes their investments, like their Yahoo Japan investment and Alibaba investment.
At the end of the day, when you sell yourself like this at a low point, it really, you know, it kind of caps, at least in my mind, you were once, you know, when people said internet, what they were thinking of was Yahoo. Mm-hmm. And now you're worth some pocket change to a cell phone service. Which is a strange, I'm not quite sure I completely understand the reason Verizon bought them.
But well, Verizon bought AOL, right?
Yeah, I don't understand that either.
Yeah, so I think this is just to, like, Yahoo will just get attached to whatever's happening with AOL at
I'm not a Verizon customer, but yeah, my take on that is Verizon charges too much money for their shitty cell phone service, and they need to spend it somehow. So they're buying a tour of last decade's internet greats. I don't understand why, but
maybe they're building a museum.
Yeah, maybe, right? We're going to have all the best domains.
I mean, I have to be honest, I don't think it impacts me at all, really. I mean, as a developer, at one time I used Yahoo libraries and tooling. You know, I used to use, like, YUI and
a lot of the internet does still.
Yeah, but that all has been fading and or deprecated for the last, you know, year, two, 3 years. So it's like there's really no
I get the impression that while the bulk of the internet has understood that stuff is fading, you know, it was still there. It still worked.
Yeah.
And it was one of those things that was on the, we need to move off of that someday. Now that, you know, Yahoo's been sold, maybe the days that stuff is literally going to stop working is going to accelerate. Yeah. So that could make for an interesting next 6 months for a lot of web properties.
I'm a little worried about what's going to happen to Flickr. I feel like there's a lot of investment in Flickr, and I personally have some investment in Flickr. So,
do you have copies of photos on Flickr that are only on Flickr?
I don't use Flickr personally, but I did a website enablement for a photographer friend of mine where she manages everything in Flickr, and then her galleries get synced using the Flickr API. So if the Flickr API goes away, it's going to end up being a lot of work for me to fix that.
That feels like one of the things that'll make the cut.
Yeah.
Right?
It's better.
Yeah. It feels like that's one of the things that's driving traffic, I'm sure. And ads. Which is what I assume the bulk of this is, right? We buy some eyeballs.
I think it's ad tech, yes.
And the advertising stuff.
I think there is a lot of traffic passing through Yahoo, and Verizon is going to find a way to capture data on that traffic or insert whatever crap tokens in it they want to track movement and ad viewing. And I'm sure nothing in the Yahoo, you know, directory is going to be safe now from Verizon's tracking.
Yeah, probably.
So
welcome to the future.
Yeah, it makes me a little sad, kind of like from an emotional standpoint, because I was really rooting for Marissa Mayer, you know, what, 3-4 years ago now when she took over. I was one of those believers that thought that the right person can resurrect a company like that, and it just
when we record this podcast, we turn off the cat's electric watering dish, and it really freaks me out.
Yep. So now he's scratching at it, trying to figure out how to turn it back on, to no avail.
Yeah,
buddy, give it up.
You know, it's funny that you mentioned that. I was rooting for Marissa Mayer too. I wanted to see Yahoo succeed But more than anything, I wanted to see a female CEO, especially in technology, succeed, is really what I wanted. And I have a lot of complicated motivations for why I want that. But, and I'm sure, you know, if we had a bazillion listeners, I would get a ton of email about all of the female CEOs and executives of companies all over the place that are succeeding just fine. But nonetheless, right, you kind of wanted
it would have been a major comeback story. It would have been to the level almost of like Apple comeback, or, you know, the Microsoft research that's happening right now, or, you know, one of these multi-billion dollar corporations that's going down the tubes.
Yep.
And someone saves it.
Kind of like
she didn't.
Verizon buying all these, like, why are they spending their money on all this crazy stuff, right? I'm probably just airing my ignorance of the business details of how ad networks and monetization of eyeballs works on the internet. But nonetheless, there it is.
Somebody sees value in it somehow.
Yep. Should we talk about the GoPro?
Oh, yeah. So you bought a GoPro. You went through the process of deciding how to use it on your trip,
mm-hmm.
right? Filming constantly, taking stills.
Time lapse, yes.
Okay. Many, many memory cards involved over many days of riding. How did it go?
Yeah, so I had six 64 gigabyte SD cards. One of the things that, so the GoPro, the Hero Session that I got, the little cube, there's like one button on it. There's two buttons on it, but, you know, there's like one big button on it, and it's all geared towards the video. And so if you push that button, it starts taking video right away. Well, I never wanted to take video. I always wanted it to take stills. And even though you can set in the settings, which you do with a GoPro app via your phone,
mm-hmm.
to say, I want the default action to be this time-lapse stuff, the button still always, if you just push it, starts taking video. And in order to take, to make it start taking time lapse, you have to push and hold the button for some number of seconds, and then it starts taking the time lapse, right? And that's fine, I guess. I wish I could have literally swapped that button to be just push it and it starts doing the time lapse.
Yeah.
'Cause I don't understand what the... I want the default action to be this time-lapse thing in the settings is. but it more or less worked. There were relatively few times that I took video as opposed to time-lapse, right? Like, sometimes I would try to turn it on and it would start taking video and I was like, ugh, and I'd turn it off and then do it again. That was mildly frustrating, but it wasn't catastrophic. There was one segment of my trip where I was pretty sure I had it started and running in time lapse, and then we got to where we were going.
How many hours of video?
Like, oh, that was taking video. It was, you know, it was less than 2 hours of video, which is fine. But so when I get around to processing that day, I guess I'll be able to make a comparison for what the video looks like compared to the time-lapse stills I was taking. So that was mildly annoying, but otherwise okay. The having to run with the door open to plug in the power cord so mm-hmm. that I can plug that into my motorcycle, that worked out fairly well. It, you know, 'cause the mount for it allows you to open the door if you do it right and have the door open while it's still clamped in the mount. The door could have been a couple of millimeters shorter, and then it would have cleared the clamps on the door better. But it never fell out of the mount, which was good, because if it fell out,
bye-bye,
it would have been gone, right?
Yeah.
So that was okay. I had it out on the fairing of this motorcycle I was on. So at almost every stop, I'd have to, take it out and like rub it on my glove or my jeans or something, just to get the bugs off the front of it. And it, like many battery powered things in our lives, I looked at it and said, man, if this thing was bigger and all battery, where it was bigger, that would be okay for me.
Yeah, something like that, where you're not mounting it on your face or on your head, on your arm. You don't really care that it's an inch by an inch or whatever it is. So,
but that said, I was using it in a weird way than I think they expected most people to use it. I wanted to use it continuously for 12 hours a day to take time-lapse photos. And the reason I didn't want to use a regular GoPro is those only get to be waterproof when they're in their case, right? And I needed the ability to be driving down the road and watching the weather form and pull off on the side of the road to put on rain gear and
close the door.
And then now it's running on battery and now it's waterproof, right? Yeah. Which I had to do a couple of times. That's not as easily done on a regular GoPro in the case. If a regular GoPro was just waterproof by default, the way this Hero Session is, that could be a better thing.
Gotcha.
The biggest compliment I can pay to it is I was able to do this without too much fiddling. I was able to capture, boatloads of data without too much fiddling, and I was never the one on this motorcycle trip I was on that was making us wait, right? Because I was messing with the camera or something, right? I mean, it was, I was able to do this thing and have it be otherwise not noticeable in terms of how I interacted with everybody else on the trip, and how long we were at a stop and how long it took us to get everybody on the bikes and ready to go and everything else. So that's good. There were several things we saw along the way that I'm really hoping
you happen to get a picture of.
We got a particularly good picture of.
See, there's no feedback on the camera, right? Like, you can't tell when it's taking a picture.
Is there
a light that flashes or anything?
You can have some lights. I've turned them all off because they would have been pretty useless, ultimately, right? So I would, just as we were getting ready to go, right, I'd walk up to the bike and I'd hit the button and hold it down, and then eventually it would start taking and I'd look at it and it'd be like, okay, because there's a small display on it. I could see, oh yes, it's now taking images, and I get on the bike and we'd go, right? But the proof will come when I stitch it all together. I have made one test video of the first day's images, which I even secretly put on Vimeo, but I have now taken all of the images off all of the different cards. We can talk about this for a second. This takes longer than you think it would take, strangely. So by default, the GoPro creates a folder, and inside the folder, it puts up to 999 images. And then when that folder fills up, it creates another folder and puts another 999 images, which is what it does. I don't know why it does it that way, but that's what it does. when you are creating a time lapse, if you can believe it or not, the internet seems to still think that one of the better ways to create a time lapse from a series of still images is to haul out your ancient version of QuickTime 7 Pro and there's a open image sequence menu option in there. So I happen to have an ancient version of QuickTime 7 Pro on my new iMac at home. It wasn't even installed, but if you dig around on Apple's website long enough, you can download a version of QuickTime 7 and enter your Pro key into it and unlock all the Pro content. Because you had to pay, I think it was like $30 back in the day for QuickTime Pro.
Right.
And it comes, you know, when you download this thing, Apple is warning you, you know, my God, this is ancient software. What
good
are you
luck.
Doing? Right? But it still works, right?
Because they think you've gotten there by mistake.
They just want you to be sure that you know what you're doing, right? Because there's a newer version of QuickTime that's supported and gets security fixes. And then there's this thing. But it's still, you know, I was watching a video on Canon's website by a professional photographer, right, that was saying, hey, this is how I do time-lapse videos, right? And this was a video from 2014 or 2000, I think it's 2015. I mean, it wasn't, the video was still pretty recent, right? And there he is using QuickTime 7. So, but anyway, so when you're doing this, you basically just point QuickTime at a folder and it just opens, you know, it just reads all the file names and says, oh, hey, these are in a numerical sequence, right? It throws away any, you know, text at the beginning of your files, right? Because the GoPro files are, you know, GoPro 00 and then some number, right? And it doesn't care if there are gaps in the numbers, right? It just, all the files in this folder are arranged in this numerical sequence, go. So what I need to do is translate all of these images from this bizarro folder structure that GoPro has produced on these cards into, you know, all of this day's images.
Right.
In one folder. And some of the days, especially days where I was capturing at one image a second, you know, I've got more than 15,000 images in a folder. So
are the folder names in sequence?
Yeah, sort of, but they're not unique across cards. They're unique on the card.
Okay.
So, I mean, this isn't super hard to do. It's just more complicated than select all, copy paste.
Right.
And so, you know, you could offload all the images into Lightroom, or you could offload all the images into Photos or something like that. But
they would order them because it would know because of timestamps.
It would, but that, why do I don't need these images in those programs, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there's, you know, more than 100,000 images.
It seems like the least efficient way just to get them all in the correct order in a single folder.
I'm going to have to export them out of there again.
Yeah. I think can write a script that'll go through your folders and get everything in the right place.
Well, I can do a lot of fancy things now with the keyboard and my mouse and Finder.
Mm.
By the end, I had figured out how to select, you know, almost an entire card's worth of images in, or at least a whole day's worth of images on a single card, and copy and paste them into the right spot. But it's, even though these are really fast cards, and my iMac is no slouch.
It's still a lot of data to move.
It's not even the raw amount of data.
It's the number of files.
It's the number of files and the underlying metadata that has to go on, right? Because you set all this stuff up and you let it go, and the you may be copying. I think the biggest one I did was the biggest day is almost 40 gigabytes of images. And you set all that stuff up to go, and moving that quantity of data, it takes some time. That's not bad. But then, like, it gets to the end of the copy, and it seems like it's doing nothing, but it takes it sometimes tens of minutes to finish to doing the indexing and everything else, right? And it's it was my impression from looking at this that what I'm seeing is the limits of HPFS Plus. And the new Apple file system could not come fast enough, right? Because putting, thousands and thousands and thousands of files in a single folder in some big, massive operation, you can do it, but you need some minutes for the file system to figure itself out again. So, fundamentally, I got to where I'd set up a big move of files, let it go, and then leave the computer be for an hour, right? Just, it'll be happier if you leave it alone, because everything is busy. There's nothing else that you can do inside Finder at all. Best you could do is Alt-Tab over to a Netflix window and watch an episode of Archer or BoJack Horseman or something, right? And wait for it to do its thing. So, gone through all of that. I'm about ready to start making time-lapse videos. It'll be good.
Cool.
I've got a lot less free space on my iMac now than I had a couple weeks ago. But yeah, it'll be good. I would do it again. And I would use the GoPro again. If somebody else tells me that they wanted to do this, I would tell them about my experience with the GoPro, and I'd recommend it. There may be other ways that they could do it, but the GoPro running off of USB 12 volt adapter with the capacity to unplug that, shut the door, and drive through rain worked out pretty well. Cool. And I did drive through some rain. I'm hoping those videos are interesting. So yeah. All right. What are we going to talk about now? Oh, I know what we got to talk about. We brought it up on the last podcast.
Oh, inadvertently. Yeah, I had my show topic files in the wrong order.
All right, so let's talk about The Devil Wears Prada.
Well, yeah, and what I had started saying last time was, you sent me this article that was in Variety, and it's entitled The Devil Wears Prada Turns 10. And I was so surprised because this is a movie that I really like, and I was just surprised that that showed up from you, because I thought I was kind of alone in liking this movie. Turns out, so now, when I did a little research, I think it's one of those rare, like, chick flicks. I know I don't mean to demean the movie, because I think it's a great movie, but I think for all intents and purposes, people would call this a chick flick that most men enjoy, because it is not your standard sappy.
Well, it's not some bad romantic comedy.
Right.
It's a pretty intelligent movie with very powerful characters that doesn't, quite frankly, spend a lot of time wandering around, bashing men.
Right.
It's not about that at all. In fact, the movie kind of goes out of its way to point out these are smart, powerful women who don't need men for permission or for anything, right?
So this is one of my movies where, every, at least once a year, it's late, I want to start a movie that I don't necessarily care if I finish or not, something I've seen before. This is kind of one that I'll put on and watch. And after reading this article, I actually went and rewatched it again this past weekend. It's a great movie.
You know what struck me? I can define movies now into two groups. Modern movies, and this is a pre-iPhone movie. Right? Because Andy's phone is such a thing in the movie.
Uh-huh.
And it's almost a character in and of itself. And it's some...
It's like a flip phone, isn't it?
Well,
like
it has a
readout on it. Like, you see who's calling.
Yeah, it had, like, some big screen, but it was clearly not... It's what kind of we
like
think
a razor-looking type thing or something.
Yeah, it was not what we think of as a modern smartphone. It was, you know, probably some crazy Nokia thing, right?
Yeah.
And,
So 10 years. So it was 2006, filming 2005-ish.
Yeah. And it...
So...
It really looks dated, right? And the way the interaction is on the phone is just so different now than how we are.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that I think has not... That most shows its age. You know, like... Miranda rides around in the back of a Mercedes. Right? I mean, I'm kind of a car guy, and I can't even really tell you...
Right, that's classic.
What year that is, right? Or whether that's new or not. And I can, I know that that's not as new as a newer one, right? And I can tell you, well, it's probably a 2006 Mercedes-Benz S-Class, right? But still, that car is more or less timeless, right? Buildings and interactions in New York are timeless.
Right.
Starbucks coffee is timeless. Even the fashions. I don't follow the fashion world. My girlfriend follows that much more closely than I, and I'm sure she would say, oh, yeah, those are all dated fashions. But, The ladies still look
fairly timeless. Yeah.
Still look quite good in what they're wearing.
No, but the phone, you're right.
But the phone is really this like big glaring thing. And it's not, they could not have anticipated it, but it's the thing that
is true. Better. Anything that is, you know, even just the first generation iPhone, anything that has a, you know, rectangular slab of glass phone.
Right. Now that you interact with. The way that we do, right?
Right, that you're touching and swiping. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, that is interesting. They were just ahead of the curve there.
So, are you pro Miranda Priestly or anti Miranda Priestly? Is that even the right question to ask?
I think, you know, I don't judge her negatively at all. Part of that is Meryl Streep.
Who's wearing a wig in this movie, by the way.
Yeah, it looks very natural, though.
It does.
That hairstyle works for her. She plays the role in such a nuanced way that while, you know, she's rude and overbearing, she's not... They even refer to her as the Dragon Lady, but she doesn't act... that way in an over-the-top fashion. She's not yelling at people and screaming at people. And she's just very...
She's quiet.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was this article. I watched the movie again, and I listened to the director commentary. I watched it a second time with the director commentary. And I don't remember in which one of those I heard it, but being quiet was apparently Meryl's... idea, and when they were doing some read-throughs of the script, she came to this and just started in her Miranda voice and was very quiet. And as soon as she did that, everyone in the room was like, that's Miranda Priestly.
Right. It's more of like a power thing. Like she seems powerful, not angry or not...
No.
You know, and often when she is being... rude, she's right, you know, and as long as she's right, then I don't know.
Well, her rudeness is always for
it's for a purpose.
It's for a purpose, right? But she's always trying to get the best out of people, or demanding the absolute best out of the people around her, right? And she doesn't care that you're going to be upset that all of your hard work is crap, right? She doesn't care because it's crap. She's almost Steve Jobs in that way, mm-hmm. right? And so I guess that's why we forgive her for being so so rude and mean, simply because she's not doing it out of spite most of the time. I kind of got the impression that once she decides that she likes Andy's character, right, or Anne Hathaway's character, Andy, she tries to put her in certain situations to make her learn to choose, to demand the best out of people, and to develop the skill for telling somebody, "You're crap, get out." Which she does, you know, with Emily Blunt.
Mm-hmm.
Who, I have to admit, it took me a long time to put in my brain that that person who, you know, was the secretary, Emily Blunt, is the same Emily Blunt that kills aliens in Edge of Tomorrow, right? Like, connecting those two people in my mind is really hard to do.
Yeah.
But yeah. One of the things they point out on the director commentary is, in a lot of scenes, Emily Blunt would be visible in the background and potentially even doing something, you know, some mm-hmm. office task. Almost none of that is scripted. That's just Emily Blunt being this character, right? And they said it. It was fantastic.
It does. I noticed it a few times. Occasionally, she's in the background and she's observing what's going on between Miranda and Andy.
Yeah.
You know, while she's working.
Because she wants that to be her.
Very interesting. Yeah.
They also point out in the director commentary there are several places where Anne Hathaway, you know, where Andy is really almost silent in scenes where other characters have this big monologue, right? So the person for whom this movie is ostensibly about almost has no lines for, you know, minutes at a time.
She's just kind of an observer. I mean, she's out of her element.
Yeah, or there's nothing to say, right? It's hard
just
to...
Just take it.
Yeah, you're just putting your head down and taking the feedback, whether you want it or not, from Miranda.
The article was interesting in that it sounds like it wasn't like a slam dunk getting the movie made. Like, there was some contention, even though it was based on, like, a best-selling book. It said she originally turned it down because they weren't offering her enough money for what she was bringing to the table. I guess this was one of the first times where she said, you know...
More.
Meryl Streep is going to make this movie.
Yeah.
You're going to pay me for it. And she really did. Like, I can't really imagine anybody else doing that role quite as well.
No.
So... Yeah, and it wasn't... I mean, there were money problems with the movie, and there was a lot of, like, things in doubt up until the very end. It said they wouldn't fly Meryl Streep to Paris, so I guess the scenes filmed at the end of the movie, she's not actually in Paris. Yeah. They flew other people to Paris for the outdoor shooting, you know? Yeah. But Meryl Streep was not in Paris.
They talk about... there's a scene at the end where Andy decides, "I've had enough."
And she gets out of the car and walks across the street. Yeah.
Right.
And that's in Paris.
Meryl goes up the steps. That scene is a composition of four different locations.
Oh, right. Because the Andy side of the street is Paris, but the Meryl side of the street obviously isn't.
Yeah. The Andy side of the street is Paris. It's two different spots in Paris.
Okay.
Right. So that whole scene is composited from four different locations. And so when you watch the director's commentary and they're like, "This is New York. That's a soundstage. This is Paris. That's a soundstage. This is New York again." You're like, holy crap. It's very disorienting, but it all It flows.
I mean, I didn't notice any discontinuity at all. And
yeah.
It was interesting when I watched it the second time because it's after reading this article. So I knew she wasn't in Paris. So then I'm trying to pick out all the places where you can tell that she's not in Paris, even though we're supposed to think she is.
The hotel room in Paris is just in New York.
Right.
And actually, the thing that you see out of the window, out of Miranda Priestley's window,
mm-hmm.
is just the building that's across the street in New York. Mm-hmm. It just happens to look Parisian. The thing you see out of the window when Andy wakes up with, was it Christian Thompson, the guy in Paris,
mm-hmm.
right, that she sleeps with? And you see the Eiffel Tower. That hotel is also in New York, but that's a green screen out the window.
Huh.
So. Yeah.
Movie magic.
Yeah. They actually cut a Mercedes in half
to be able to film the car scenes?
To film a lot of the car scenes.
Huh. Because there's a lot of really important scenes, actually, that take place in the back of the car.
They're having a hard time getting the camera where they wanted. And so the director's like, well, can we cut the car in half? You know, can we destroy this car? And they didn't think they're going to get to do it. But Mercedes was like, well, that's a pre-production model anyway. We can't sell it. So when we get it back from you, we're going to destroy it anyway. So, sure. Huh. And so they, you know, this $100,000 car, they sawzalled it in half and they could put the cameras where they needed and away they went. So, yeah, I don't know. It's neat. It's a neat movie.
It is. It's interesting, you know, in this article, someone referred to her as a villain, as a great villain, and I definitely don't see her as a villain.
Well, she's not the fairy godmother.
No, I mean, she is not, obviously not the heroine, but I feel like...
And she's pretty cruel to Nigel.
Yeah. I guess. That is true. I guess I respect.
Yeah.
I
feel like I have a very complicated relationship with Miranda Priestley, as Andy does, which is kind of the point of the movie.
Hmm.
And like Andy, I can turn the movie off. Right? If I'm tired of Miranda, I can just turn it off.
Right. Oh, the other thing I found interesting was, you know, her boyfriend is, what's his name? Like Adrien Grenier or something like that. It's the guy who was Vince in Entourage.
Okay.
Did you ever watch Entourage on HBO? He just like, he's one of those interesting actors where he got this really big part in Entourage, but then, you know, he was in a couple bit part movies and his career just never really went anywhere. So I always think it's odd when I watch this, like, oh yeah, he was in this movie.
So. I'm looking him up right now and let's see what else he was in. So funny story, after I watched this two times, right, I watched it and then I watched it like a day or two later with the commentary, I was like, man, I just need to watch something blow up. And so after I finished the commentary...
Did you go to Star Trek?
I saw that too. But no, I went upstairs and I poured myself a very big glass of scotch and I went downstairs and put on a Jason Bourne movie and watched them for 2 hours. It was... I just had a very strong urge to see something blow up. I don't know why that is. Adrien Grenier? Grenier?
I think it's pronounced Grenier.
Yeah. So, scrolling through his filmography.
I mean, the first thing I even have heard of is Entourage. And then the next thing is The Devil Wears Prada.
He was in a Britney Spears video. He was in AI. Another Britney Spears video.
Right, so basically Entourage and The Devil Wears Prada.
But, you know, there's nothing wrong with choosing, you know, I assume a lot of these other things. There's a film called Sex, Death, and Bowling. I mean, I assume that's a some art house film, right?
Mm-hmm.
Something wrong
with maybe that's it. He just made all this Entourage money and now he can do what he wants.
Maybe. I don't know. He's, how old is he? He's as old as I am. He's born in 76, so. I don't know. I guess that means by the time he was doing Entourage in 2004, he might have been old enough to, be smart enough about his money to keep some of it.
Probably.
Right? Like, yeah. I don't know. Money is a thing that we never talk about as a society, but I find it wildly interesting. Okay.
Yeah, no, so I think this movie's going to stick around. I think another 10 years down the road, except now that, you know, you drew my attention to the phone, now I'm never going to be able to watch it the same again, but...
Well, it clearly exists in a...
It just sets it to a point in time. Yep.
One of the things I talked about in the commentary was a lot of this was filmed and takes place before the like reality TV explosion in fashion that has since occurred. You know, and that's... They were like, yeah, we were at the forefront of that, right? Mm-hmm. And... they think that, you know, it's an interesting world and people want to peer into it. After you watch it, do you consider your wardrobe selections a little more carefully?
No.
In the subsequent days?
No. I have no fashion sense.
But you could.
Oh, the other thing that was crazy. Okay, we can move on, but... Stanley Tucci was cast, like, the day before they started filming.
Yeah.
And he's perfect for that part.
Yeah.
Like, I can't imagine anybody else playing that part. No. So, I think that was just some serendipity or something. But I always think that's so interesting. I always figure that a big film like this is very well planned and organized. But
when you watch, you know, commentaries, director commentaries, or start reading about films that end up being, you know, successful and the ones that you remember across time, what I've taken from it is so often
they don't know at the time.
They're just another movie,
mm-hmm.
right? And yeah, they end up, you know, getting the right group of people at the right time, and some people give some great performances, you know, like Meryl Streep's performance in this movie is unbelievable, right? Anne Hathaway's performance is really quite good. Everybody's performance is really good. But at the time, it's just another movie.
Right.
You know? I mean, you're so busy with the day-to-day and trying to stay on top of everything that's going on that, you know, you don't really realize that you're doing something great until...
It's in post, probably.
Yeah, until it's done, right?
Mm-hmm.
I suppose that's okay, right? If you knew at the time, or almost... You know, if people think, oh, we're doing something great.
We're making a Best Picture.
We're making episode one.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Right. Yeah.
All right.
Did you see Star Trek while we're talking about
movies? No, I haven't seen it yet. I rewatched Star Trek and Into Darkness, but...
So we will not...
If we didn't record tonight, I was going to go watch it tonight. No, I probably won't see it till this weekend, but...
That's a heavy weight for me.
Two of those movies I've probably seen. This was probably the third time watching each of those.
I thought the first one was really good. And the second one, Into Darkness, eh.
It's okay. It's interesting.
They felt compelled to bring people back from the dead and... That was a part they should have left out.
Yeah.
Right. Like, I could get behind it.
I guess they wanted to introduce Khan, and they wanted to produce a backstory for Khan, which I do kind of like that. I like the fact that we have a prequel that's integrating ideas from the future series and, you know, respecting the continuity of it and stuff like that.
Yeah, but they could have picked a backstory that wasn't quite so fantastic.
True. I do think it's odd. I think that's odd casting. I think it's odd that, like, a white man with a British accent is, like, your superhuman, you know, your ideal and specimen.
And like, he's not, like, super strong. I mean,
no, he's very cunning. Yeah, it's Benedict Cumberbatch. I think they just wanted him in the movie, and I think they kind of sacrificed, you know, maybe some integrity there in casting.
Yeah,
but I don't know. It just seems like an odd choice. He's just kind of he's not like a big guy, particularly robust. And they did try and like focus on the intelligence part of it rather than the like brawn part of it. But
yeah, but the end, it devolves to, you know, punching people
right
anyway.
Yeah, it was such an odd. Right, it's odd that our big build up battle is between, you know, Spock, Zachary Quinto, and Benedict Cumberbatch. Yeah. I mean, it's just an odd. It's odd. Yeah. It was odd casting. Yeah. Maybe that's part of the reason for the casting, though. They knew that Spock was going to kick his ass, and so it had to be somebody that you could see Spock reasonably defeating. Hand to hand combat.
How do you get to a script where at the end Spock is just punching a guy in the face and you're like, yeah, this is the movie we're going to make? No, right? You've done it wrong.
I see. There's a lot of problematic things in that movie. now that you mention it. But it's still a good movie.
Well, it's a Star Trek movie, right? Is it a good movie? I don't know.
No, but I really do think the first one was exceptional.
You know, its opening sequence to create this mythos for Kirk's father, you know, as somebody impossible to live up to, I thought was wonderful, right? Yeah. Did you see Ghostbusters?
I did.
Did you like it?
I did, very much.
I liked it too. I think it's been panned, right?
Oh, I haven't looked at Rotten Tomatoes.
But I...
I don't know. I feel like there's all this weird kind of, like, I don't know, nascent, like, sexism involved in critiques of that movie that I kind of don't want to think about.
I can't say that I liked it better than the original Ghostbusters.
No.
And I can't say that... Oh, it's got
73% fresh.
Yeah. And I can't say that I think that Melissa McCarthy really hit one out of the park there in this movie. I don't know. She was the one I had the most trouble with, personally. Mm-hmm. And it...
about it... So I think they're funny. Like, I think Kate McKinnon is just hilarious. Kristen Wiig is funny. Melissa McCarthy's funny. Like, the humor is there. I didn't feel like the personality was there. The charisma of the characters. And that's something that the original movie has. Like, I feel like the characters are very charismatic. You know, they're quirky, but they have, like, a charismatic personality. All of them in, you know, one way or another.
Yeah.
Whereas these women were all funny, but there just wasn't a lot of depth to their characters, I didn't think.
Well, there's...
There were caricatures more.
Yeah, who was the scientist one? Holtzman?
Yeah, that's Kate McKinnon.
She was my favorite.
Yeah.
Because safety lights are for dudes.
Right.
I don't know why that's so funny to me, but that's very funny to me. So, yeah, I hope people see it.
Yeah.
I don't understand the internet hate for it.
I don't either. I do understand that, I mean, it maybe doesn't live up to the originals, but...
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean... I liked it. I laughed a lot. It's interesting, the audience score is only 58%, but that's, once again, that's internet rage. Like, I find it hard to believe that only 60% of people who watch that movie... liked it.
Well, if you go into it deciding you're going to hate it, then A, why are you wasting your money? But B, I don't know that it's going to I don't know that it's so awesome that it'll change your mind.
Part of the problem is there was so much lead up to it. I mean, they've been pushing this movie for a year.
Yeah.
In the media, as far as like, you know, oh, we got these four women, we're remaking Ghostbusters, going to be the greatest movie of all time.
Yep.
Greatest female comedy of all time. So I think there was a lot of hype surrounding it that did it a disservice.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I don't know. Part of the argument is, you know, no, all exposure is good, right? I mean,
right.
It's the Donald Trump campaign. So, I don't know.
And on that note...
yeah. I don't know. There it is. I don't understand the internet hate about that this movie somehow takes away from the other movies. That does not true. And people who hold the other movies up in such high regard are probably conveniently forgetting how terrible Ghostbusters 2 and 3 were.
That's the thing. That's the thing. Have you watched them recently?
No.
I mean, a few months ago I watched them. Like
all three of them?
Just the first two. Because that's what was on, like, I think it was on Amazon Prime or something.
Yeah.
They're funny. And like I said, I mean, the characters are so funny. And like those guys have great personalities. But I mean, the production value of those movies is terrible. Like, they're not great movies.
No.
They don't hold up well. I guess that's the point. I mean, if you watched it thinking, you know, about a modern CG type experience, like...
Nope.
No. So that's the tough thing. I mean, I think people romanticize them a little bit.
Well, yeah. yeah. But that's okay. Any other good movies lately?
No.
No?
I haven't seen much anything.
Have you watched the Wonder Woman trailer?
I know.
Looks
Does
good.
Does it look good?
Yeah.
So, you know, I was really interested in seeing The Legend of Tarzan, and I see that it's has 36%. So apparently it was bad. You didn't see that, did you?
No.
I really like... So the guy who plays Tarzan was in True Blood. He was Eric in True Blood.
Okay.
I just think he's a really good actor. So I wanted to see it, but it sounds like maybe I should wait for stream it.
Yep.
For free.
For streaming. Yeah. So the Wonder Woman trailer was pretty cool. I'm excited for that.
When's that coming out? So the Wonder Woman is a DC.
DC.
Okay, and is it the same actress who got introduced in Batman versus Superman?
Yep.
Okay. That's cool.
I don't know when it's expected. Next year. Chris Pine is in it.
Who's he playing?
Steve Trevor.
I don't know DC Comics.
Yeah, well, yeah. So, watch the trailer. The IMDb says June 2nd, so it's a next summer blockbuster. Probably because, you know, 100 million digital effects artists have to apply their trade upon it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Wonder Woman was the best part of Batman vs. Superman, and now there's going to be a whole movie about it. So
all right.
I'm all for it. All for it. Well, while we're talking about movies, should we talk about the Rogue One celebration reel? Is that what they call it?
Sure.
Which you just watched. I don't know. Mostly it's about dropping the link and making sure people go watch it. Cause
yeah.
It looks good.
It does look good.
I'm excited for this movie. I didn't think I would be excited for it, but I'm really excited for it.
It's interesting. This reel has a lot of like terrestrial footage. Cause I'm assuming, you know, it's things that don't require special effects essentially.
Yeah.
So, you know, this video is a lot of stuff being filmed outside on, you know,
in the world.
In the real world, not in space.
Right.
Which I found very interesting, you know. but it's probably what they had to work with for this. So, but a lot of cool stuff. It seems like there's going to be some interesting characters. So there's this picture of stormtroopers standing knee deep in
water.
The water with like tourists sort of wandering around behind them.
Yeah.
It's a really interesting shot. There's like palm trees.
Yeah, well, the poster for it shows, you know, the Death Star out in space, and then they're on a beach, and there's palm trees. Yeah, huh. I don't know if you've seen the poster for it. Yeah, I don't know. I'm excited for this. The
that's cool.
Yeah. So I assume there'll be, you know, more trailers and stuff.
Yeah.
As time goes on. Which will, the internet will eagerly dissect.
Yeah, I might try and not pay too much attention. I did that prior to The Force Awakens. And I was happy that when I went to see it, I knew nothing. Hmm. So.
The garbage will do.
Yeah. I feel like they're pushing, I don't know if this is maybe a bad sign, but they're pushing out more information about this movie much farther in advance. You remember for Force Awakens, when the teaser trailer came out, what was it, like 6 months in advance?
Yeah.
And it was just kind of a blip. I mean, there was nothing to it. And yet we were like, oh, you must see immediately, you know. And then even the full-length trailer was pretty vague.
Yeah.
And there wasn't a lot of information released. They were pretty tight-lipped. So it's odd to me that there's a lot of push going on as from you know, production standpoint surrounding this movie.
Well, I think Rogue One not being part of the trilogies.
Yeah.
Right? Is probably giving...
Part of the saga?
It's probably giving studio executives who are footing... what's undoubtedly a really big bill to make this thing, a little more heartburn, right? You know, are people going to go see this in the same way they went and saw episode 7? Or, episode 7.
Right.
I think the answer is yes, but maybe they feel like they can get away with showing more simply because there's... it's harder to guess what's going to go on, right? Because it's...
We don't know the characters.
We don't really know the characters. And you already know more or less the time period it's set in.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, I mean, you already know probably what's going to happen, right? I mean, you can guess, right? We need you to steal the plans for the Death Star.
I bet she doesn't get them. I bet she fails.
Maybe. Maybe R2-D2 saves the day again. Because that seems to be his sole purpose in this universe.
So that'll be interesting to see if they continue to ramp up the release of information surrounding this movie and what that ultimately means for it.
Yeah.
But I'm still excited for it. I don't buy into the hate. Haters gonna hate, man.
Speaking of haters, are you interested in seeing Suicide Squad, which opens in like a week or two?
I am, but I'm concerned it's going to be terrible.
Well, the rumor was they had to go do a bunch of reshoots because it was terrible.
I mean, the trailer I saw way back, it just seems so bizarre the way those characters are portrayed. So, I don't know. I mean, I'm interested to see it, but it's not like I'm excited to see it because I think it's going to be a great movie.
It's almost like you can't take your eyes off of
it. Yeah, I'm worried. but I'm definitely going to see it, so I guess they're going to get my $9 or whatever, so they probably don't care if I'm just going to see if it bombs.
But... I want to be part of the bomb. Yeah.
And then everyone goes to see how bad it is, and so it's a huge success, right?
Well, sort of. Right? You'll go see it on opening weekend, and then the next weekend it'll have a 87% drop-off or something.
Yeah, right? Whereas The Force Awakens I saw, you know, 5 times.
Yeah. And while we're talking about Star Wars, we'll include the link to The Floppy Strikes Back.
Oh, yeah.
That surfaced again. That's a fun video.
Yeah, I haven't seen that for years. So what it is right, a bunch of old computing devices, floppy disks and...
Scanner.
Yeah. Programmed to play... What, Empire Strikes Back, that theme?
Yeah. It's the sound that their motors and actuators make. All programmed in such a way to do the right thing.
And it's pretty authentic.
Yeah, it's cool. It's neat that somebody took all that time to do it.
Probably it was like months of work to acquire all of that hardware and get it set up.
Yeah. Well, yeah. The internet is a wonderful thing. Yeah. It's an outlet for people to do... stuff that has relatively low value other than to fill the world with joy, right? So, yeah. So we'll drop that link because it's fun to watch. All right.
Cool.
Should we talk about this last thing, about this turning your anxiety into excitement?
Sure.
Article? Did you read it?
I did.
I can sum it up very simply. If you're anxious about something, tell yourself that you're excited. And it works, right? It's the same physical response, but if you're anxious, and if you tell yourself and other people that you're anxious, that implies you're expecting a negative outcome. Or you're worried about a negative outcome. But if you're excited, then that implies a positive outcome. And most of the time, when you're expecting good things to happen, they do. That's the sum total of what this experiment was about, right? So I'm excited for Wonder Woman and Rogue One, right? I'm anxious about Suicide Squad.
No, I thought this really interesting. You know, I haven't really found an opportunity yet, I think, to employ this strategy. Mm-hmm. One place I can see this really being effective is, like, you know, I do stage productions. Yeah. And before, you know, going on for a show, you're always very nervous. And I would call that, you know, anxiety.
Yep.
Because there's all this fear about, you know, messing up, tripping, falling, whatever. I can see driving that as excitement because it is, it is a positive and a negative feeling, right? The nervousness is, you know, nervous energy isn't always a completely negative thing, right?
You're having a physical response to a thing, so you can mentally choose which way you want it to go, right?
Right. So that's one case where I plan to employ this or at least think about it. You know, I'm so excited for this, not, you know, I'm nervous, anxious, worried.
You should do more than think about it. Yeah. You should outwardly express to your fellow cast members, you know, hey, it's opening night. I'm really excited.
Yeah.
Right? Because I think you have to tell somebody to convince yourself, right?
Right.
And if you're lucky, you might get some people around you to at least go from being anxious to neutral. Right? Oh, Scott's really excited. Maybe I should be excited too, right?
And that's the article talked about it before. What was their thing? Oh, they were doing karaoke.
Yeah.
Before karaoke, which is kind of silly, but same thing, stage performing, public speaking, stuff like that, where it is viable to say it's excitement. There are some times you're anxious about something, you know, like, I don't know, something bad happening that I don't know if you can really justify calling it excitement. Like, I'm excited to find out medical test results. I mean, that kind of thing doesn't really. But it's when it's nervous energy.
Opening night for you can be...
I definitely get it when it's like a performance situation.
Yeah. Or, I mean,
even
anything,
like, you know,
right?
Presenting something, speaking, you know, in a meeting at work, there are a lot of even just day-to-day things that cause anxiety that really...
Yeah, if you're a high school senior and you're about to take the ACT or something like that, right? You can say, I'm excited to go prove to the world how smart I am.
Right. Yeah, no, it's a great theory. I like it.
Yeah. What else you got?
Oh, I think I'm ready to wind it down. How much you my coffee/whiskey glass is empty.
Yeah, that could be a problem. So
that's all I had to chat about.
Okay, well, until next time.
Sounds good. See ya.